Now, yesterday I talked about the age of accountability, and I said, let's suppose that the age is 12. That would mean that the day before your 12th birthday, if you died an unbeliever, you would go to heaven because you hadn't reached that all-important age. And if you died the day after, you would go to hell. But it needs to be taken to a further extreme. Because you would need to determine, if there is an age of accountability, the minute of birth. You would have to go to the birth records at the hospital to find out the date and the time of birth. Because it's at that very minute that you cross over from being 11 years old to 12 years old. It doesn't happen on a day. I mean, it happens on a day, but it happens more specifically at a minute, at a second. And so it becomes even more ludicrous to think that eternal destiny hangs on the minute you were born. And then the minute, no, let's just say the second, becomes the threshold, the crossing of which will doom you to an eternity in hell. What is being risked here with having a child in the first place? To have a child in the first place, you're risking that child being tormented in hell for eternity. Because after they reach that magical age, they're accountable. And if they make a mistake, if they get into some deviant practices like smoking or drinking or premarital sex, they're not believers and they're going to hell. So it would be the utmost responsibility to kill all human beings before they reach the age of accountability. And I suppose it is most convenient to kill them while they're in the womb. I don't see how any Christian parents can take the chance. That is, if they really thought about what an eternity of torment is. But of course, they don't think about it, but they do believe it. But they don't think about the details of the concept of never-ending pain and torture for their loved one. If there was only a 1% chance of that, number one, I don't see how you can bring a child into the world. I'll just stop with that. I don't see how you can bring a child into the world. If you think that salvation depends on wisdom, righteousness, intelligence, human wisdom, human righteousness, human intelligence, you will try to bring up your child the best you can, but you just don't know. You just don't know if it's gonna take. We all know the stories of pastors' kids who they maybe mouth the words of faith. They maybe do everything that their parents want them to do. They go to church every day and they hate it. They're not allowed to watch certain movies and they hate it. They're not allowed to hang around with certain people and they hate it. And then once they get out of the house, they go crazy. They go on a spree, which probably shows that they never believed what their parents told them in the first place. Nice going, parent. Now your child, and then, of course, they die. Let's say they start taking drugs. A lot of people do. They start taking meth or they start doing some dubious habit that ends up killing them. They get in a car accident. They're texting while they're driving, and they die. And they die in their sin. They die having not repented. The parents are wringing their hands. We can't exactly remember if they said the sinner's prayer or not. Oh my God, was it sincere? Well, we know little Jimmy went to the altar at age 10, but that was, what did he know what he was saying? And so all this angst and all this hand wringing is based on the evil of placing the responsibility for salvation on human shoulders in the first place. So if you follow this out logically, which they don't do, logic is not a hallmark of the Christian religion. If they followed it out logically, you wouldn't have kids. Why the hell would you take the chance? And plus, you would be crazy their whole life just trying to make sure, say the right words, say the right words. say it this way. And then you would have to, this is why people go to the altar call so many times. Haven't you talked to people who have like been to the altar like 10 times? Every time there's an altar call, they got to go because they just weren't sure if the last altar call took or if they were sincere enough. Were they in the right frame of mind? Did they have the proper instruction? Did they use the right words? Was their heart right? All of these, it's a huge gamble. It's a crapshoot. Unless you learn the truth, which is salvation goes upon the shoulders of Jesus Christ. Now, yesterday I told you that the concern is that people aren't wise enough, aren't righteous enough, but the whole human race has this affliction. And I was very careful to tell you that God treats the entire human race as if we're all mentally retarded. Yes, he does. Treats the whole human race that way. So my ready answer for those who say, but what about those who have never heard? They're no different than the people who have heard and the message was skewed, as it always is in Christianity. The gospel is mixed. It's a bastardized gospel. They're mixing elements of the law in with Paul. People are not hearing the right message anyway, and they reject it. This is when I made the brilliant point that God looks at the entire human race as mentally deficient. I'm reviewing some things, and I'm going to springboard off of these things to bring you some truth here. Romans 3:10, not one is just, not even one. Not one is understanding, not one is seeking out God, all avoid him. That was Romans 3:10, 11, and 12. That's ironclad. Nobody escapes that. The genius doesn't escape it any more than the mentally deficient. The guy who's never heard of Jesus Christ in the deepest darks of Africa is just as victimized by this verse as is the person who's surrounded by the so-called Christian message all of his or her life and rejects it. Because it's either mispresented or that God has not given faith. Oh, and here's a backup verse for Romans 3:10, 11, and 12. And this is another ironclad statement of God's in Romans 11:32. For God locks up all together in stubbornness. That's it. Ironclad. God locks up all together in stubbornness. There's no demarcation here. There's no smart or stupid or young or old or never heard it my whole life. No distinction. Oh, Paul eventually uses those very words. I knew I heard them somewhere. Romans 3:22. There is no distinction. Stop with the age of accountability. There is no distinction. For all sinned and are wanting of the glory of God, the glory of God. All are wanting, all are lacking. Nobody can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. And if you need another verse verifying that, Romans 11:32. God locks up. That's the key. He locks it. Locks up altogether in stubbornness. But I must give you the second part of that verse. That he should be merciful to all. The same God who locks up all together in stubbornness is the only one that can unlock. Let me run something past you here. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but this dawned on me maybe 10 years ago. And I don't think I've talked about it much. This might be new to a lot of you. Let's say that this was the plan of salvation. Let's say that God brought billions of people, human beings, into existence through Adam. And let's say that the lifetime of every human being becomes an experience of understanding what good and evil is. Because that's what happened when our forebears, Adam and Eve, ate the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. It began the experience of contrast, of understanding what life is because of the grim reality of death. Okay. But let's say there's no distinct and specific revelation of God. Let's say that all human beings, they come and go, they live their lives, they're 70, they go through life and they die. And these are all out of Adam. But let's say that during the course of these human beings coming into the world, another man came, but this man was not an ordinary man. He was the Son of God. His human lineage came from his mother, but his divine lineage came from God. And this man, knowing that because of partaking of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which was a sin because it was the one law God had in the garden, this man, the Son of God, would know that all are wanting. There's no distinction, for everyone is wanting of the glory of God. So he comes as the second Adam. He comes as the last Adam. That's the proper term. And he dies for all the misses, that is, all the sins of everyone that's ever been born. So humanity comes one at a time, for 6,000 years. They live and they die, but they have this valuable experience in the meantime of good and evil. But they have no real revelation of God, because let's say the action of the Son of God happened in a corner. Let's say that it happened on a dim, dark day, and nobody ended up knowing about it. And then God, in his wisdom, has a resurrection. He's not going to leave anyone dead. He has this judgment period called the Great White Throne Judgment. Okay, people die. Some Adam dies, and he stays dead. Abraham dies, he stays dead. Everybody dies. Napoleon dies, stays dead. Mother Teresa dies, stays dead. Judy Garland dies, stays dead. Larry, Curly, and Moe, they die and they stay dead. But there is a resurrection when all the dead will come forth, but not until then. And so at the Great White Throne Judgment, and there is such a judgment, by the way, you read about it in Revelation chapter 20. At the Great White Throne Judgment, everybody wakes up. And they're all standing before God. Now, some people in their lives did good. Some people in their lives did evil. Larry, Curly, and Moe, for instance, they did great good. But other people, such as Joel Osteen and Billy Graham, they did great evil. So they're all standing there. And God adjusts them. There is some pain. There's some flinching. There are also some pats on the head. Well done. But all of humanity is here. You, me, Mother Teresa, Lucille Ball, Hitler, can't forget him. But God says, and everybody is brought to an understanding of God. But God says, you know, it's not yet time for you to live with me for eternity. I'm going to have a romp with my son. Me and my son, my son went through hell when he was on earth. I'm going to make a new heavens and a new earth. And I'm going to put my son on it. And him and me, we're going to romp on the new earth. And we're going to have a great time. But after that's over with, in the meantime, all you humans, you're going to have to go back into death. You've been judged. You've been brought up from the dead. You've been adjusted. You know the score now. I'm going to send you all back to death. Don't worry. It'll be just like the first death, in that the dead don't know anything. But I'm going to bring you all back, and this time permanently. After my little romp on the new heavens and the new earth with my son is over, I'm going to bring everybody back permanently. And you, my human creation, you are going to live with me in complete bliss, complete happiness for eternity. for each forever and ever, the true forever and ever. You're going to live with me forever. Let me ask you if anybody would have room to complain about that deal. Let me tell you why. Because you are born in this world and you live your life. And yes, there are heartaches, there is evil, there are bad things that happen, but God sows in some beautiful things in everyone's life. You have beautiful things to look at. You have trees, you have birds, you have animals, and God gives you food. He gives you giant juicy things that grow on trees like apples and oranges. And there's some great stuff that comes out of the ground like potatoes and radishes and carrots. And God creates people who invent television, and you have great television shows like the Lawrence Welk Show and back to the Three Stooges, and great movies are made like The Wizard of Oz. And so God knows that life is hard, so he's sown in some pleasure, some diversions to keep you from thinking about the fact that you're gonna die. So people live on the average, what, maybe 80 years? 80 years. It sounds like a long time. And people do get sick. People do have miserable times. But God provided for Cocoa Pebbles. He provided for Biddle Honeys. He provided for Snickers bars. He provided for parties. People have parties. He made sure people figured out how to ferment the grape. It was a great thing. Ferment the grape. Help you get through this life. Sand off the rough edges. It's only 80 years, or 100 years if you're unlucky. And then, boom, you go to sleep. And the dead don't know anything. By the way, there's no sensation in death. It's like non-existent. You're unaware completely. And to you, if 1,000 years goes by until the time you're resurrected, you're not even aware of the passage of time, right? You close your eyes and you wake up. And to you, it was like a blink. And you're standing before this great white throne I've been telling you about. And God says, we have a few adjustments to make here. And then God adjusts everyone. And he says, well, I'm going to have to send you, now that everybody's cool, all right, I'm going to send you back into death. And the objection might come, oh, but boom. And they're awakened at the consummation. And there they live with God for eternity. What a deal. What a deal. You live for 80 years with little Cocoa Pebbles sewn in, and Three Stooges, and Gilligan's Island, and then you end up living with God for eternity. No one would have any complaints. That'd be the greatest plan ever. God would be so gracious to do that for human beings. Why are you bringing me in this life in the first place? Because I have bliss, complete bliss, happiness, joy for you forever with no end with me. It's like, what does this cost me? Only 80 years on this planet. Well, that's not so bad. I got trees. I got the Lucy Show. I got Three Musketeers bars. I can do this. But here's what God does. Okay, if that was the deal, everybody would sign up for it. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. He's doing you a favor to bring you into the world. We're doing you a huge favor. But now God is going to do something completely wildly innovative and gracious and ridiculously, redundantly fun. He is going to give some people, while they're living, a special revelation, a special little treat that's even better than Three Musketeers bars. And that is, he's going to give them faith in him, and he's going to reveal himself to them, and he's going to say to them, psst, I got a little special for you. Okay. You're not going to have to wait until the great white throne to raise from the dead. What? How? Wait, what? I got a secret inside deal for you. You know that bliss I was talking about? Yeah. That everybody signed up for? Yeah. That's going to be so great for eternity? Yeah. Well, just between me and you, I'm getting you in on that early. What? Me? Why? Just because I want to. Just because I'm dying to get... I just really want people to be with me. I just really want people to get in on what I'm doing. And you know what? I'll tell you this too. It's going to be a little lonely with just me and my son frolicking on the new earth. I'm going to populate it with people. We're going to frolic around like deer and antelopes. Wow. You mean this is like before this already great deal? Yeah, it's going to be before. Who the hell would complain about the first deal? And who the hell would not realize that this early thing God is doing is so super abundantly generous? The reason I bring this up is because when people hear me say that, like, a baby dies without believing, or some guy in deepest, darkest Africa dies never having heard Christ, that only seems to be a ripoff in light of the fact that God gives some people faith and he's bringing them into salvation early. He's bringing them into this eternal life early. It's only a ripoff in comparison with that. And then people get jealous. That's not fair. That poor Aborigine, that's the guy in Australia, that poor Aborigine, oh, he's not going to be with God. He's not going to have aeonian life. He's not going to come in early. He won't be on the new earth or whatever. It only seems to be a ripoff in light of this, especially salvation that God gives to us. So I'm trying desperately to readjust our thinking to see that if everybody went to the great white throne, if nobody lived during the 1,000 years, if nobody lived during the new heavens and the new earth besides Jesus Christ, it would still be the most amazing thing to trade 80 years of life mixed in with little cocoa pebbles for an eternity of bliss with God. Nobody, even if they go to the second death, big whoop, you're sleeping again. Big whoop. So it's basically 80 years and then boom, you're in. All the thousands of years you were dead in the first death, all the thousands of years you're dead in the second death, they don't amount to anything because you're not conscious during those times. So it's like born 80 years, cocoa pebbles, boom, eternity with God. It's sick to be pissed that, oh, this person didn't get faith. Oh, no, they're going to not live during 1,000 years. They're going to not. What a bunch of ungrateful ingrates.